Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, July 12th, 2010. I'm Lee Robertus. In the news tonight, Moscow City Council Committee sends false fire alarm ordinance to the full City Council for approval. Wallowa-Whitman National Forest office burns to the ground in Enterprise, Oregon. And Food and Drug Administration on the verge of approving genetically modified salmon for human consumption. We'll have details on these stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Wind from today's cold front caused power outages in the region, including 600 customers without power in St. Mary's and more than 2,500 customers without power in Colville. The St. Mary's power interruption was fixed by 2 p.m. today. Another 1,000 were without power in Spokane this afternoon. The wind whipped up a fire in Assotin County at the site of the old Bennett Lumber Mill near the Clarkston Country Club. Winds are expected to subside tonight. The Forest Service and other agencies are scrambling to relocate about 100 workers after the Wallowa Mountains office of the Wallowa-Whitman National Forest was completely destroyed by fire in Enterprise, Oregon yesterday. Wallowa-Whitman National Forest spokesperson Judy Wing called the building, which was built in 1990, a total loss. No one was injured in the fire, which crews believe started at about 5 p.m. The fire is still under investigation. About 90 Forest Service employees and 10 employees of the Farm Service Agency worked in the building, which had picturesque views of the Wallowa Mountains. The building had a visitor center, the offices for the Eagle Cap and Wallowa Valley Ranger Districts, Farm Service Agency offices, and an office for Hell's Canyon Recreation Area. Wing said, "Right now, we are focusing on supporting those employees and trying to figure out temporary office space and how to communicate. We are trying to assess what has been lost, what people need to have replaced to do their jobs." The Moscow City Council's Administrative Committee today voted to move forward with a new false fire alarm ordinance, putting the item on the City Council agenda with a recommendation that they pass it. The ordinance would make it an infraction for a person to make a false alarm not based on the belief there is a need for emergency fire services. Under the draft, citations would be given to those who cause false fire alarms because of faulty maintenance, lack of maintenance, faulty equipment, intentional pranks, malicious damage to system components, or poor supervision of non-smoking regulations in hotel rooms. In the draft, citations would result in fines that would increase for additional false alarms. Also, there would be an appeal process similar to the process used for parking tickets. Committee member Tim Brown said the ordinance would likely most impact group living areas on the University of Idaho campus. Brown said he has managed a University of Idaho fraternity for 30 years, which gives him some perspective on false fire alarms.
Smoke alarms are set off by the cook burning food, and it does happen on weekends predominantly. When some person comes to your house that you kicked out the weekend before, and as a prank, as is on his way out the door, this time he jerks the fire alarm. So I can appreciate the fact that the fraternities, and I doubt there's very many sororities, but they have cooks that burn food too. But anyhow, the fraternities would be the predominant cause of the problem here. I don't think the fine is going to help that. Unfortunately, the mentality in these cases is, well, the fraternity will pay it, the prankster won't pay it, and the fraternity is a collective body of people that spreads the problem over however many are in the house and not the guy that's actually causing the trouble. So I have no problem with the fining system or the rates. I just hope it'll do some good. I doubt it, in the fraternity's point of view.
Moscow City Councilmember Tim Brown. Under the proposal, the person responsible for the property would be subject to the fines. City Attorney Randy Fife said if a false alarm comes from a fraternity and someone responds and claims nobody is in charge there, the fine would go to the fraternity. Under the proposed ordinance put forward by the Moscow Fire Department and the Moscow Volunteer Fire Department, there would be no fine for the first or second false alarm during a 12-month period, a $25 fine for the third and fourth alarm, and a $100 fine for each false alarm after that. The Administrative Committee also today approved the proposed recently negotiated agreement between the City and the University of Idaho to provide police services for the university campus. The committee forwarded the contract to the full City Council with a recommendation that it pass. The $938,000 annual contract was negotiated by City legal staff and, if approved, will last until June 30th, 2014, with the potential for two additional three-year extensions. The exact amount of each year's payment will be subject to an inflation multiplier. Committee Chair Wayne Krause had a question for Moscow Police Chief Dan Weaver about the hours of the campus commander under the contract.
Campus commander, so you have actually Monday through Thursdays, 7 to 5, or Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 4:30. Is this a discretionary, up to the campus commander how he wants to do it, or is this up to the university? They can have one or the other. What's the situation?
It's depending upon need. You know, there are some things, if they've got a lot of activities going on campus and we need to change the hours of the commander, that gives us the flexibility to do so.
Okay.
So it's based on activities on campus and the need and the staffing levels, the level of supervision that we need for various activities. So it just gives us a little bit of flex.
So it changes week to week then?
Yes, it could.
Krause said the contract has some rough edges that might have to be cleared up, but overall he thinks it's an excellent contract, which he is in favor of. The Idaho Attorney General's Office has filed a motion to dismiss Representative Shirley Ringo's lawsuit against the State Tax Commission and legislature over what she says is the common practice of granting wealthy, politically connected taxpayers millions of dollars worth of secret tax breaks after they file tax protests. The Attorney General's office says the Moscow Democrat lacks standing to sue because she has not suffered an injury. The motion also says Ringo cannot sue as a legislator because this case does not involve nullification of votes or usurpation of power. It goes on to say no member of the legislature has a personal interest in that issue, which does not implicate a legislator's salary or the proper counting of the legislator's vote. Ringo told the Spokesman Review, "I find that quite narrow because I feel quite strongly about my responsibility for representing my constituents. If the legislature is not going to act, then there ought to be some other remedy, and I think this is an appropriate one to try." Ringo says her oath of office is to uphold the state constitution, which requires uniform taxation. Fourth District Judge Sherry Copsey has set a September 9th hearing date on the state's motion to dismiss. Meanwhile, Ringo has filed an amended complaint saying the secret deals violate the constitutional guarantee of equal protection. She is also requesting an injunction to stop all secret tax compromises by the Tax Commission until a new appeals process is put into place. The Idaho Fish and Game Commission late last week approved an expanded regulatory framework for hunting wolves that would allow trapping and the use of electronic calls. Fish and Game Wildlife Bureau Chief Jeff Gould says the commission has not yet determined the specifics of how traps and snares could be used to kill wolves. Gould says specifics will come when the commission sets wolf hunting seasons in August. Gould said the new regulatory framework means trapping could be allowed in some hunting units or not at all, and could be restricted by time of year. Defenders of Wildlife President Roger Schlickhuysen said the commission's vote shows why wolves should be returned to the endangered species list in the Northern Rockies. Defenders of Wildlife is the lead plaintiff in a lawsuit against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that says wolf populations have not rebounded enough to warrant delisting, and in addition argues that Idaho and Montana have remained hostile to wolves since they were taken off the endangered species list. Schlickhuysen said, "We can only hope that the court will soon issue a ruling that puts a stop to such extreme measures. It will take all of us working together to develop a long-term, scientifically solid recovery and management plan for wolves." A Massachusetts company says it is on the verge of federal approval for a strain of bioengineered Atlantic salmon, which use Pacific Chinook genes to turn it into a faster-growing fish. If approved, this will be the first genetically engineered animal allowed under United States law intended for human consumption. Although the financial potential for genetically engineered fish is enormous, concerns abound about the health effects of bioengineered food protein and the environmental degradation caused by fish farming. Center for Food Safety senior staffer George Kimbrell said if the Food and Drug Administration approves Aqua Bounty's application to market the eggs of the transgenic salmon, his organization will likely sue. The most common farmed fish is Atlantic salmon, and they are raised in net pens off the coasts of Washington, Maine, and British Columbia. An estimated 400,000 to 1 million Atlantic salmon have escaped into the wild from operations in British Columbia, according to a Purdue University study highly criticized by the biotech community. If 60 transgenic fish bred in a population of 60,000 wild fish, the wild strain would be extinct after 40 generations. Aqua Bounty says intermixing with wild fish doesn't have to be a problem because these salmon have sterile females and can be raised in inland containment pools. Aqua Bounty says it also has programs for bioengineered trout and tilapia. Meanwhile, NOAA Fisheries says Columbia Basin wild salmon numbers are running far ahead of their expectations this year. Favorable ocean conditions, improvement in habitat and hatchery practices, and fish passage improvements at dams are all credited with the increase. Idaho and federal agencies say that without their programs to raise and release 140,000 sockeye smolts annually, they would have been extinct by now in the Columbia and Snake Rivers. For the third year in a row, an expected 25,000 Chinook salmon returning to the Snake River will allow a fall Chinook season on the Snake River between Lewiston and Hell's Canyon Dam. President Obama's Blue Ribbon Commission on America's Nuclear Future, created in the wake of the decision to terminate the Yucca Mountain Repository, will meet in the Tri-Cities this week. The commission will tour Hanford's spent fuel and high-level waste vitrification plant, which are under construction, and see the relationship between large nuclear facilities and communities they affect. The panel is expected to hear from tribes, the Oregon Department of Energy, the Hanford Advisory Board, among other groups. Washington Governor Chris Gregoire will also attend. Gregoire has opposed the halt of the Yucca Mountain project because it leaves the state with no assurance that the processed waste in the state of Washington can be sent away. An eastern Idaho property has been seized and designated a crime scene after investigators with the Environmental Protection Agency say they found hundreds of drums of leaking chemicals that endangered local wells and wetlands. The Rexburg area landowner Max Spatig says the accusations are groundless. In other news today, Idaho Republican Senators Michael Crapo and Jim Risch say they don't approve of the state Republican Party platform plank advocating the repeal of the 17th Amendment of the Constitution. The amendment, enacted in 1913, established the direct election of U.S. senators by popular vote. Previous to that, senators were chosen by state legislatures. The 17th Amendment, a chief backer of the plank to eliminate the 17th Amendment, Representative Pete Nielsen of Mountain Home, says Governor C.L. Butch Otter supports the plank, but the governor has declined to state his position. Meanwhile, Representatives Mike Simpson joined Representatives Maxine Bell and Senator Joe Stegner of the Idaho Legislature in their non-support of the Republican Party platform plank requiring Republicans to sign a loyalty oath to the party in which they say they either support the Republican Party platform or list the areas of non-support. The chief proponent of the plank, Senate Majority Leader Rod Beck, says it will help primary voters determine if elected officials support Republican principles. The so-called Barefoot Bandit was captured in the Bahamas yesterday. Colton Harris Moore escaped from a Washington State halfway house in 2008 and allegedly committed burglaries across Washington, Idaho, and British Columbia. The 19-year-old Harris Moore, who has no formal flight training, allegedly has stolen at least five planes, including one in Indiana that he crash-landed in shallow waters off a Bahama island. He also allegedly stole a plane in Bonners Ferry, Idaho, and crash-landed it near Granite, Washington. Someone recognized Harris Moore on a Bahama island and alerted authorities. He was captured after a high-speed boat chase. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Take a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. Areas of blowing dust before midnight tonight. Clear with a low around 44. Breezy west winds 20 to 25 miles per hour, decreasing to 10 miles per hour overnight. Wind gusts could be as high as 40 miles an hour. Sunny tomorrow, high 69. West winds 5 to 15, gusts up to 20. Mostly clear Tuesday night with a low of 44. West winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 20 miles per hour. And clear weather expected Wednesday through the weekend and into Monday of next week, with highs of 84 on Thursday and around 80 degrees Friday through Monday. Lows will be around 50 degrees. Currently, we have 74 degrees, fair skies. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, we have news and opinions from the West Side with Eat the Airwaves, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio, coming up at 6:30. I'm Lee Robartis. Remember, every edition of the KRFP Evening Report is available online at the Radio Free Moscow website. This is KRFP Moscow.